It is Friday, November 12th, and I am here in Lawrence, Kansas, with Dr. Beverly Boyd to talk about Philippine Duchesne.
Duchesne.
Thank you. Dr. Boyd, the Religion Kansas Project seeks to create a public record. Do we have your permission to make this interview available?
Yes, indeed.
Thank you. Okay, well, just to start things off, I understand when you worked for the Department of English at KU that your focus was medieval literature. How did you become interested in the life of Philippines?
Oh, this in itself is interesting. The first place, my doctoral dissertation was on an aspect of saints, and I later revised that and published it as the Middle English Miracles of the Virgin Mary, mm-hmm. of course. And I wrote a number of articles on the saints' legends of medieval England. So I had some background in this, although I'm primarily a Chaucer scholar. And it just happens that Columbia University is on a hill, like KU, and just below it was Manhattanville College, which had an elementary school attached to it, which was pretty convenient because I got a job there while I was a graduate student. And I lived in on the campus so that I didn't have to commute and burn myself out. There was a great big picture of Philippine, who had been beatified, and I didn't detect any great interest in her, and I wasn't attracted at all to the picture. There it was. And I forgot about Philippine when I left New York and pursued my career. And then I finally came here in 62. And after I had been here for a while, I needed some surgery, and I went to the KU Medical Center. And you know, you get pretty hazy after an anesthetic. And the Catholic chaplain asked me if I wanted something to read, and I may have said something awful, but it amounted to no. And then I said, well, how about a biography of Bishop Miege, who was big in these parts? And he couldn't find one. Good reason, there wasn't one then. And he left me a big brochure out of the Kansas City Star that had the story of the mission down in Linn County in Philippine, picture of Philippine. I thought, I'm on her frontier. I couldn't believe it. And of course I got interested, and the next thing I did after I got well, I went down to Linn County and went to see the church that was built down there for her, in honor of her beatification. It's a beautiful little Gothic church with stained glass windows showing her life in North America. And one thing led to the next, and if that isn't interesting, I don't know what is.
About how big is that church?
Oh, it's small compared to like St. John's in Lawrence, mm-hmm. but it can hold a lot of people.
Do the stained glass windows depicting her life, do they follow a sequence?
Yes.
Is it like a biographical sequence, life in France,
yeah.
all the way
oh,
to...
Oh, no. No church is that big.
I didn't think so.
No, it starts with her landing with her nuns in New Orleans after a hair-raising journey across the Atlantic in which they were pursued by pirates, if you please, who after all did not bother them. And they got to New Orleans. They had been invited by the first bishop of the Louisiana Territory. And he must have forgotten that they were coming or something, and no preparations up here had been made. So they were almost a year living with the Ursulines in New Orleans before they came up the Mississippi. And they were given a house in nowhere, as that became St. Charles, Missouri. And that's where her missionary activity in the United States began.
So no one was there to meet Philippine?
Oh, some townspeople knew they were coming.
I see.
From St. Louis. No, he wasn't there. Oh, I'm not sure whether he was there or not. I think not. He may have been, but that question I wasn't prepared for. I think not.
Yeah, probably not.
I'll tell you what, though, they got a mortgage for which they had no money to pay.
Now that I didn't know.
Yes.
Was this on a house in St. Charles?
Yes, yes. He was very good at that. This was Bishop Dubourg, who was the bishop of the entire Louisiana Territory and Florida.
Oh, and Florida, too.
Yeah.
I was under the impression, I don't know the dates, but I was under the impression Florida was still... When did that become incorporated into the United States? That wasn't part of the Louisiana Purchase,
no,
of course.
No, not to my knowledge.
Yeah.
No. I think that was Spanish.
At this point in time still, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
But they had to have clergy.
Of course, yes.
I'm not up on that either. You're asking me questions that I'm not
prepared. Well, I digress. you know, despite coming from France and spending much of her time, in fact, the vast majority of her time in other parts of the country, especially what would later become Missouri and Louisiana.
Well, specifically, Missouri, she made trips up and down the Mississippi to found convents, schools for girls. And a great sacrifice to herself. She was 49 years old when she first came to North America. And she got awfully sick in these places. She got, I believe she had cholera.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Was it cholera on the voyage over?
I think she had yellow fever and
yes,
was horribly
right.
seasick on the way over. Everybody was.
Yeah.
I mean, it took the best part of a month to cross the Atlantic in those days.
But to finish my question, why do you think she's often remembered as a Kansas saint rather than, say, a Missouri saint?
Actually, she isn't rather one or the other, because Kansas was part of Missouri when she came here. They were talking about sainthood, separating the one from the other, because issues such as race, slavery, were showing their ugly heads, and that was to have great repercussions pretty soon. I don't know John Brown's dates, but all that was going to happen, and you had conflict that early. I don't know they were doing any shooting, but
the tension was still
there.
Things
were happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned that Philippine came to America when she was considerably older by the standards of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think it took so long for her to be able to realize her dream and her determination to do missionary work?
She was sent here by Dubourg, who petitioned to have her and a colony of nuns come over here. He knew that she expected to teach Indians, and so did her order. They didn't send her to Indians. They sent her to the St. Louis area, St. Charles specifically.
Right.
And they didn't intend for her to be in St. Charles. They intended for her to be in St. Louis, but there was no property, you see. These were very small places, and the way of life was kind of primitive.
Well, it seems to me, though, that when she first arrived, and instead of teaching and undertaking instruction, she, I don't want to say got roped into, but she seemed to be spending a lot of her time in administrative duties.
Yes, well, she was the superior. She had to do that.
Do you think she considered that, I mean, of course we can't read her mind, but do you think she considered that a burden or a hindrance to...
Well, she didn't want to be praised for it, let's say. She didn't want to be noted as a great administrator or anything like that. She didn't want praise or recognition. She simply wanted the job to get done. And so, she was the superior, and that's the person who does the administration. It must have been a hot potato, because it was very hard to get pupils. They were live-in pupils, and she had trouble collecting their fees. And part of the philosophy of her order was also teaching the poor. And she had poor pupils, but to her credit, she founded the first school, really, for black kids.
Yeah, the first free school. Well, that was in
west of the Mississippi.
In Florissant?
No. She tried to do that in St. Charles, and then finished up in Florissant. Have you read this book?
I have read select chapters from it.
Well,
access to that.
It's yours. I give
you sure?
these to people.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
this will be a big
free.
Help. Great. You know, when I was speaking of this biography and others, when I was reading translations of her correspondences and journal entries, she seems constantly frustrated by what she perceives to be, you know, her failures, whether it's administratively raising the money, meeting the needs of the children, or not being able to teach and live where she wants. I guess what I'm trying to say is,
or she saw herself as a failure. She understood herself as a failure. And this is probably true in many ways, but it's also a characteristic of religious mystics. They think they're the worst person in the world, and that's part of religious humility. Exaggerated though it may be. So that isn't just her realization that she wasn't getting the job done. The circumstances wouldn't let her get the job done.
Would you say that's characteristic of religious orders in general, or more specific to the Sacred Heart?
No, I think it's has nothing to do with being in a religious order. I think it is something that any person exposed to these conditions while trying to do something that has a spiritual orientation, I think they all feel like that, unless they get into extraordinarily beneficial surroundings, which they wouldn't be there in the first place.
That's very true. What can you tell me about the canonization process in the Catholic Church?
Well, I can't tell you much because I've never been that close to the engine. The first thing that happens is they appoint a postulator, and the cause, all the circumstances of the person's life are thoroughly examined, and it takes years. And also, it's expensive. They have to pay people for their time if they, for example, want medical opinions and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's expensive. It isn't just a thing of spiritual significance. And it's all ultimately conducted in Rome. And they even have a devil's advocate. They don't anymore, but they have to examine the negative side of these things, because they don't want to be bestowing these accolades on the lives of people who shouldn't have that. You never can tell what the public doesn't know about some figure. But of course, they have had reprobates who've turned over a new leaf and become saints, Mary Magdalene.
Mm-hmm.
or so tradition says. There's nothing in the scriptures that says that she was the prostitute of
right.
the New Testament story. Did I answer your question?
You did, thank you. You mentioned, though, that it can be a very expensive process. How are those funds typically raised? Where do they come from?
I don't know that.
Okay.
I do know that the money for Philippine's canonization came from places where her order has been established for a long time, typically South America.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was canonized, people from their schools all over the world came to Rome for that, wearing their national costumes. It was very
mm-hmm.
interesting.
I wasn't aware of that.
Well, I thought the Japanese obis were very handsome. Yeah.
And who first initiated her her campaign for sainthood?
Oh, that is something I really don't know.
Okay.
Her order had, Archbishop May of St. Louis, who is now deceased, was the one who pushed hardest and was the authority behind the bid for canonization.
I see.
And he was the person in charge of the proceedings that followed the announcement that there would be a canonization. It all went through his representative. I never dealt with Archbishop May. I wrote him a letter once and offered my services if I could, you know, help at all with the arrangements after, you know, this had been scheduled and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I really didn't have anything to do with that. There was a Monsignor Wilkerson in the St. Louis area priest, and he was Archbishop May's representative. It was a very strange situation because when we were on the way on chartered flights,
mm-hmm.
I think they were chartered or else they had booked up most of the seats on these planes. There were a lot of people. The Pope excommunicated Archbishop Lefebvre, who was a separatist, who ordained his own bishops, and you can't do that.
Right.
He had set up a North American headquarters in St. Mary's down near Topeka.
Mm-hmm.
And established a college there and everything. It was the site of the old Indian reservation, the Potawatomi place, where the Indians still are. They were moved from Linn County down to St. Mary's.
I see. And that would have been after Philippine had passed away, correct?
Yeah, well, she wasn't here at the time. I don't know the date when all that happened.
That's fine.
But her party of nuns was involved in that, and they never left. They're buried down there in Mount Calvary Cemetery. I think there are four of them buried in there. It's a beautiful place. It's on top of a hill full of cedar trees, and it has a sweeping view of the countryside around Topeka.
It sounds beautiful.
Yes, it is. It really is.
And about what year was this that that bishop, or was it archbishop, who was excommunicated?
Lefebvre. It would have been in, it was the same weekend as the canonization.
Oh, that late.
That was July 3rd, 1988. And
okay.
I think he did that on July 2nd. That was the previous pope. And he looked terrible at the canonization ceremony. He looked ill. Well, he was, but we weren't party to that information. But they said he was terribly upset. He didn't want to do that.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you wrote a letter to Archbishop May?
Yeah.
Was that the beginning of your involvement?
No. That was after all the canonization had
been announced.
I just simply offered my services. They weren't needed. But Wilkerson did contact me, and I was asked to contact other people, which I had done anyway.
So would you describe your participation in the process
as mostly
organizational?
It was mostly publicity.
Okay.
Philippine was totally unknown around Kansas, and the news was not entirely welcome.
Really?
Oh, no. This is not exactly Catholic territory.
Well, that's true.
You have to remember, in the old days, they had the Ku Klux Klan down here. And we were one of the K's. This fell, of course. Now we have something else, but I won't get into that.
Sure.
No, I made a lot of contacts, and contacted a lot of people, and went to places where I wouldn't normally have gone, wrote a lot of letters, and don't ask to see them. I don't keep records. I can hardly balance my checkbook. I did spend a lot of money.
So were you writing primarily to gather funds or support?
Support. I didn't ask anybody for money.
Okay.
No.
So who were you writing to primarily? Parishioners in the area? Other people who might have contributions to
priests,
the process?
Priests mostly, to drum up interest, to just simply remind them that this happened here and there was some interest in pursuing the matter. I'm trying to think what else. I tried contacting her order, that I hadn't been in touch with for like 40 years or so, and the person I spoke to, who is now deceased, wasn't a bit interested. She was a failure. They had given up. They really had. And I wrote to one of the Kennedys, and not interested. I had met this person. No way.
This religious of the Sacred Heart?
No,
you wrote to?
One of the Kennedys.
Oh, one of the Kennedys.
I don't want
to
identify anybody.
No, that's fine.
I thought I'd get some support, but they probably thought I was after their money.
Could be.
The person didn't even reply. I got a reply from his or her secretary.
Thank you for your interest in so-and-so.
Yeah, really. We'll call you in.
Right. Now, I had read about how the Order of the Sacred Heart kind of backed off on promoting her cause.
Well, it seemed they had tried, and it just seemed impossible. And I got a taste of that when I tried for publicity in Kansas, because there was just no interest in that.
Mm.
And one place I went to, talking about the history of it, asked me if I had seen their revised railway station. So that's where you get. But when the story broke in Newsweek magazine, it had been the fact that there would be a canonization had been leaked to a very prominent editor who worked for Newsweek, and he scooped it. He was the first person to do that, and that's when the real phone call started.
I see. Everybody reads Newsweek.
Yes, not anymore. They won't. The Newsweek has just gone into partnership with what's the name of the, is it Mad Dog or something like that on the television, a news sheet.
I'm not sure.
Oh, I don't follow any of that, but I watch CNN. But there is a political news sheet. That's the wrong name, but it's something to do with.
Is it a, you mean like a radio show?
Yeah, television.
A television show.
I think it's television.
I don't know.
But
it's
Newsweek has become. It's announced today, and I'll be embarrassed when I find out what the correct name of that is. They're always talking about it.
I hadn't heard that. That's interesting. Do you know about when the canonization process was picked up again and by whom? If the Sacred Heart had found it impossible?
It didn't come from them. I don't know exactly what was going on in the rest of the country, but I know that ever since that episode that I had in the KU Medical Center, I had been on the stick. And I don't know what, if anything, the results of that were, because I had no inkling that there was any interest here. There was locally, the people in Linn County had never forgotten Mother Duchenne.
Of course.
There was that window in the St. Lawrence Center, which was constructed before anybody knew that there was going to be a canonization.
Was that building constructed in the 60s or later?
Later.
Okay.
Late, I think in the 80s. There's
late.
A cornerstone.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I was just curious.
Yeah. But by the time they consecrated that, I think they knew there was going to be a canonization.
It was that late in the game?
I think
point?
So.
Okay.
See, the canonization was 1988.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, I think the beatification was
1940. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you know what miracles were reported to support her?
Well, I do, vaguely. I knew by name and everything at one point, but there was a man with cirrhosis of the liver,
mm-hmm.
from South America someplace, and he was cured, and that was the inspiration for the beatification. And then somebody else had cancer of the throat who was cured, and somebody else had cancer someplace else, and she had already had two miracles long ago, and they could have canonized her, but they just didn't.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. I couldn't find any information about miracles associated with her. Do you know about these earlier miracles that they could have used to support canonization?
Well, I know that they were physical things. The first one, that man with cirrhosis of the liver, I think that was why she was beatified. And then there were two female cases. The most recent one that led to the canonization was one of their own nuns. I believe she was French, and she went to San Francisco, and I think she had already been diagnosed and was examined in San Francisco, and I think they were the ones that said this is incurable, and then she went back for another examination and it was gone, which is impossible.
Yeah, that's surprising.
Well, those things are always rather amazing, and they don't necessarily happen overnight. I'm making a fool of myself over this. I should know who the three were, because once upon a time I did know. You forget things. Oh.
Well, that's okay if you can't remember the specific dates. Going back to Philippine's life,
mm-hmm.
you know, towards the end, you know, of her years when she was in retirement, there was a kind of a period where she ceased responding with Sophie in France.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had been correspondents ever since she arrived. What do you think explains that?
Well,
lack of
I checked on that a little while ago. In the first place, Madeline Sophie was having terrible trouble of an administrative nature, because those people had lived through the French Revolution and the Napoleonic follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
She had to hold her order together against laws that were anti-clerical and so forth, and also against strong minds within her own order that had different views on how things should be done, and that can be very difficult. There was that sort of thing at home for Madeline Sophie, but also specifically regarding Philippine, Philippine didn't get the letters that had been written. And Madeline Sophie had been too busy to write, and Philippine thought she was being, she had done something or said something, and she really grieved over this. And finally, somebody else told Madeline Sophie on what was going on with Philippine, and she hastened to rectify that, even sending somebody related to Philippine over here.
Carrying the letter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if she carried the letter, but she was sent over here as a gesture of caring. I'm trying to think what else needs to be said. Oh, yes, the physical conditions for conducting mail were horrible. Mm-hmm. A lot of the mail that was sent never reached the objective, and we don't know what letters may have been lost. Not unless somebody says, "I've just written to you and we have this."
That would have been months ago.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
They did a lot of letter writing, and it was an art then that education was greatly concerned with, letter writing, because that was the ordinary means, not just of communication, but writing a letter is creative, and you had to learn how to do it properly. Yes, there was a woman here in Lawrence whose name was Duchenne. She's deceased now, but she believed that she was related to Philippine.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of letters from this woman's family, and I was allowed to read them, but reading French handwriting from the 19th century early in French and in bad condition, you know. It was awful, and we tried to get these letters for the Spencer Research Library, but that didn't happen. Her father had kept these letters in a book, and of course if letters are treated like that, they crumble the same way a book will do.
Oh, yes.
It's not properly taken care of. But the odd thing was that when Wilma died, she died on Philippines Feast, and that's the death day, and she died at the same time, noon, as Philippine.
Oh, wow.
Died. And she probably didn't know this was happening to her, but
I'm sure. That's still pretty amazing.
Yes, it certainly is. I was going to ask you a question just then, and I can't think, what was that? It slipped my mind over this. Okay, well.
Was it in relation to my question about their correspondence with Madeline and Sophie?
No, I don't think so. Hmm. Something that is collateral with that, but I can't do it.
Well, going back to that just briefly, an explanation I heard is that when Philippine had retired, the superior who took her place was intentionally keeping some of the responses.
Oh, no.
No, not credible.
And that was Mother Gallitzin, who was sent over here as the supervisor to make sure everything was working. And she had heard from other people that Philippine was going down here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were no amenities here, and by that time she was in her 70s.
Yeah.
And was infirm in the first place. she had in mind to send Philippine back to St. Louis.
I see.
And that's what finally happened. She wasn't mean. She was just one of these people that was too strict, you know. And she put the rules and the nitty-gritty above human relations. She didn't have any empathy for people. Philippine would have loved to die here. It didn't happen. Oh, I wanted to ask you, you were talking to somebody, you said, about that rift between Philippine and Madeline Sophie.
Oh, I wasn't talking.
Who
was
it?
I wasn't talking to someone. I was reading about it.
Oh.
I'm sorry if I
No,
misspoke.
Well, I just wondered if you had interviewed somebody.
No, unfortunately, no.
Huh.
I had read it, actually, in a another biography by Catherine Mooney, I think her last name is.
Oh, yeah, I have that book. That's a modern book with
yes.
a piece of modern art on it. The man who did that piece of modern art is responsible for the art and design of the basilica in St. Charles that's on the site of her old school, which is still there, by the way, 1818.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. It was closed at one point and reopened at another point, but it claims 1818 as its
mm-hmm.
founding date. This man, God, I can't think of his name now, but he's a very well-known architect. It's a German name. And, what you can't do ad lib is amazing after a few years. But he painted and also was an architect. And it's only half a church down there. They didn't have the money to finish it.
Right.
But there's talk of finishing it now. And it's quite austere, and her remains are in a rose marble tomb.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really nothing there except a little bone. something like what happened to Cardinal Newman. There was nothing left when they went to beatify him. They found a little bit of hair, and that's it.
You said the building is half a church. Do you mean that structurally it's incomplete?
Yes, wow. Yes. It's long and only half of what it was supposed to be, but they've made it very austere, the art and the design. This man's name begins with SCH, and I think of what it is now. Everything in it is very modern, and you catch the mood of the woman. She was austere.
Oh, yes.
And this place was austere. They've made the site of the old Pottawatomie Reservation in Linn County, they've made it into a park.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. There was a man very prominent in this area. His name is Bob White, and he mustered a bunch of people and raised the funding and put his own funding in it, and they cleared the land that had been somebody's farm and turned it into a park, and there's a big altar there. And then there's a lot of, there's a pergola and bathrooms and parking lot. They've done a very nice job of it.
Is it an outdoor altar?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's no indoor to this. This is what used to be the reservation.
I see.
And the Pottawatomie people do go down there. I have been down there with Indians, but there's nothing. The Jesuits who were in charge of the place originally, they burned all the buildings because they feared vandalism, and it was all burnt before they took up residence down in St. Mary's. St. Mary's is interesting. The cemetery has a circle of graves of the early Jesuits. They're moss-grown. You can hardly read the names on the tombstones. It says something or other Irishman. something or other German.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do many Potawatomi still live in the area? Where that old reservation used to be?
No, you couldn't live there. The land is given to floods and mud.
Mm.
The mud is awful. In fact, the nuns wore sabots down there to go outside and carry water and things Jeez. Like that. Yeah. The government picked it out.
Of course,
they didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, they were death marched down here. It was horrible.
And that wasn't the first relocation, I understand. They originally came from Canada, or
That's
Ontario,
right.
correct?
They were Canadian. Most of them that I know have French names.
Hmm.
Not all of them, but
right.
many of them. They pronounce them in English. And the Jesuits who ran the place down in Linn County, they were Belgians, French-speaking Belgians.
Okay.
But not Father de Smet. He didn't come into Kansas. A lot of people think that this was a Father de Smet venture. It wasn't. This is a biography of Father de Smet by John Killoran. He had a lot of trouble getting it published because, like a lot of these things, including the book you have now, they're written from a religious point of view, and academic publishers don't want that.
Yeah.
And he finally got it published. I believe it was Oklahoma did it. But
he was involved in the Rocky Mountain area.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and Mother Duchenne wanted so badly to go up to the Rockies.
I read about that, yes. And all at 71, right?
Yeah.
She still wanted to.
Did you know that her feast day is this week?
I didn't.
No, it's Thursday, the 18th of November.
Huh.
Yeah. They have a ceremony every year started by the present Archbishop. And they give somebody who has, you know, done something, especially teaching for the church, they get an award, they get a plaque, and they get a speech.
A little recognition.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. I got that a couple of years ago. Yeah.
Cool. Talking about Father DeSmet briefly, the Potawatomi mission, as you said, was not his project, and he was not there, correct?
That's right. He never came into Kansas. He wanted to, but, you know, those people were limited by the seasons. They could only do so much, and you can't come down here in the winter.
It's paralyzing.
It's awful, and the summer isn't much better.
Why do you think he was so insistent that Philippine take part?
Oh, she wanted it so badly. And look, she had come across the Atlantic Ocean at 50 years of age to do that. So why didn't they let her do it? Well, it was administrative. They couldn't get their act together. And Duborg had he had known that that's what she wanted to do, and he never let her do it. He wanted it all hands on deck in the St. Louis area.
Yeah.
I mean, he was dreadful. He gave other people mortgages that they couldn't pay.
Well,
put up the building and let them worry about it.
Right. His part's done, I guess.
Yeah, there's a statue of him on the grounds of St. Louis University.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting place. Robert Frost has a statue there, too, because he gave a lecture there once. Yeah. You know, the Jesuits were very instrumental in this area. In fact, they founded St. John's Church here in Lawrence. But, you know, the Civil War changed a lot of things. People withdrew. The religious orders did. They left.
Yeah. Did they leave because?
It was dangerous.
And just because of the fighting?
Well, threats of fighting or whatever, I don't know. I can't give you the date of departure, but the nuns pulled out.
From the major cities, did they stay in some of the rural areas, do you know?
No, it was the rural areas they had to get out of
for
their safety.
I see.
There were other orders of women down here. There was one, let's see, there was an order of nuns south of Linn County, or maybe on the southern edge of Linn County. And they had an establishment down there to take care of Indians. And it wasn't Potawatomi Indians, it was another tribe that were trying to help.
Were they Carmelites by any chance?
No.
Okay.
No. Carmelites don't do that. They're cloistered and contemplative.
I see.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people often say that, you know, the lives of the saints are no longer relevant, or what we can learn from them. You know, today's world is limited. What would you say about that? What do you think that we could learn from Philippine Duchenne?
Well, look what she did in this region when she was 50 years of age and later. And 50 would be 60 now. I read all kinds of stuff, and some of the books that describe what's waiting for you in old age. I looked at one, and in, to quote it, it says, aging sucks.
That's an understatement.
It certainly is. And when you come across somebody who has done what she did, as she got into her age, it's amazing.
It really is.
It's amazing. She didn't just sit down when she retired. She was forced to retire. She kept on doing things from her chair in St. Charles.
Mm-hmm.
And she prayed. I mean, she prayed as much time as they would let her. And a lot of people think that, well, what did she do? She founded girls' schools? I've heard nuns say that. It didn't seem challenging to them.
Jeez.
Well, heck, I found girls' schools on the frontier where there's no money to support
right.
them. And there are a bunch of laws that stop you from doing it your way. Goodness, it's amazing what somebody with spunk can do with his or her remaining years. It's amazing.
I would be surprised to hear nuns say that. I mean, you mentioned that a woman of the Sacred Heart said she was a failure.
Well, she was.
Well, in a lot of ways she was, but, I mean, still, as you said, I mean, considering
mm-hmm.
what she did in the context
mm-hmm.
of the times, it really is remarkable.
Well, we look at it that way. Did her contemporaries look at it that way? I mean, if you were running a chain of schools, how would you look at that? A little differently, perhaps.
I see your point.
But, you know, being a saint isn't what you did only. It's what you are. And this was a person who was totally dedicated to everything that her religion stands for. And it wasn't just the institutional church. I mean, this woman was a believer.
Oh, yes.
And she lived that way. Let's say she was a mystic who did works. But her relationship with the Almighty was more important than founding schools. But that's what enabled her to found schools on the frontier.
In those conditions,
yes.
At that age.
Yes. 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 Really remarkable. Mm-hmm. But still, a lot of Catholics never heard of her. So, I mean, you may as well face it. If you go to California and start talking about Mother Duchenne, people won't know what you're talking about.
Well, I think that just about wraps things up. Is there anything else that you wanted to discuss or anything you'd like
to
say?
No, I don't think so. I have a picture of myself at the canonization mass. That was the previous pope,
mm-hmm.
and people were selected by her order to receive communion from him because there was a Spanish priest canonized at the same mass. His name was Rojas, R-O-J-A-S, and that's one name I remember. And they have very strict rules, too, about things like that. He only would give it to you in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Now they let you use your hands. You have to be dressed acceptably to them. You have to have sleeves, for example. No bare shoulders. No low cuts. No shorts. People actually, even as tourists, you can't go into St. Peter's in shorts.
Yeah, you have pants or a mask, right?
Oh, yeah. If you have bare arms and slacks, they'll give you a paper cape to put on to cover your nakedness.
Well, thank you for your time.
Not at all. This is my favorite occupation, except I don't get to do it very often.